Welcome to the podcast. As before, my name is Kyle Willard. I am the host, and we're going to start diving into the first series of the podcast. And the first series really has to do with, you know, continuing our talk about learning. That really is going to be a big theme throughout a lot of this podcast. It's going to be bringing you, you know, learning materials, kind of stuff to learn, where to learn it, why it's important. And we're basically going to nail it down. You know, today we're going to start looking at the foundations for front-end web development. You know, I've got my show notes out in front of me, which will, starting with this podcast, start being supplied with the podcast. I know that it's important for some to be able to kind of reference things and to take a look at links and to kind of do a deeper dive. And again, the whole point of this is to make sure that you have the resources to learn, right? So, you know, looking at it, we're going to be talking about HTML, CSS, and JavaScript. These really are the foundation for front-end web development. They really, truly are. JavaScript is the language for front-end web development. It's basically exclusively... you can do some stuff on the front end without it, but generally when we're talking about the current styling of web pages, which is essentially just a single page application, it's going to be built in JavaScript most likely. We're gonna focus really hard on the basics, and then in part two, we're going to talk about more advanced topics. We're going to talk about things such as the front end frameworks. We're going to talk about Angular, Vue, React, Next, Nuxt. And a couple others, and we're going to talk about state management, the things that, you know, kind of tie all that together, and hopefully we're able to finish that in the second part of this series, at which point we're going to be diving into the back end. The back end is going to be a little more complicated for me, just because of the fact that there are programming languages that I'm not super familiar with. You know, in the back end, you have Python, you have Java, you have C#, you have... you know, React or JavaScript with Node, you have Ruby with Rails, you have PHP. Like it gets very, very, very interesting once you hit the back end of web development. So I'll be trying to grab some people, bring them in, experts in the field, what have you. Hopefully we can cover all of that. That will be for the future. I do want to note before we dive too deep, this isn't meant to be an, you know, the end all of conclusive list of things to learn. This is just scratching the basic surface and going over some of the more critical components and telling you what it is and why. There are going to be parts of this where we just go into what the definition is and we move on a little more rapidly. But in the show notes, you're going to see some links. You're going to see, you know, a lot of what I actually say on the podcast. I do tend to lead off with what's written in my show notes and kind of go off on a tangent, so bear with me. But with that, you know, just understand, you know, even if it's not mentioned in here and it you think as a, you know, somebody who's already dipped their toe into the world of software engineering and web development specifically, you know, if you think something's critical and I've missed it, there's a good chance that it is the bare bone basics that I'm missing and kind of forcing you down the rabbit hole to kind of find on your own. All right, so HTML. What is HTML? HTML is the foundation for all things on the front end, basically. It stands for Hypertext Markup Language. It is not, I'm going to make sure that I say this very clearly, it is not a programming language. Do not say that you are a programmer or a software engineer if all you know is HTML and CSS. Sorry, but the reality is until you actually add JavaScript to that stack, you're not there yet. HTML is a standard markup language for creating web pages. HTML describes the structure of a web page. It consists of a series of elements, and the elements tell the browser how to display the content. Elements label pieces of content such as this heading, this paragraph, and this link. That was taken for W3 Schools. Link is included in the show notes. You know, the simplest level to put this is HTML is the bones of your project. It's like you're building a house. You put in your foundation and then you put in your framing. It's the framing. It's the same kind of thing. As you get into front-end frameworks, you will start to see a convergence of HTML with JavaScript to create more, you know, complex applications. But HTML is the nasty-looking boards hanging out in the walls of your house or apartment that are hidden behind the drywall, the plaster, and the paint. It's the same mentality, right? These are the building blocks. Inside of HTML, there is what is called semantic HTML. There was a time, back when dinosaurs roamed the earth, that we used this one simple container called div. Div was great. The problem is that there were a lot of web pages, and I am 100% guilty of this as well, that had like 1,000 divs throughout the entire page. Since then, we've gotten things such as section, right? Header, footer, etc. And it's kind of become more semantic. And the reason that it's important to use semantic, and I'll actually just read a quote here from an article. The benefit of writing semantic HTML stems from what should be the driving goal of any website. The desire to communicate. By adding semantic tags to your document, you provide additional information about that document, which aids in communication. Specifically, semantic tags make it clear to the browser what the meaning of the page and its content is. The clarity is also communicated with search engines, ensuring that the right pages are delivered for the right queries. The sort is ThoughtCo. It's included in the show notes. Accessibility. That's the next one. And actually, I'm going to spend a couple minutes on this one. I really do think it's important because this is a critical piece. You know, if you want to develop for businesses, you really need to listen to this one because it is a critical component. It should be a critical component to everybody, but businesses especially, listen up. You know, you're really likely to get hit with a lawsuit if your website does not employ adequate accessibility. It's going to be an issue. You know, the reason that it's an issue is because accessibility is taking into account the weaknesses and the differences, you know, in people. You know, there are folks that can't see, there are folks that can't hear, there are folks that can't talk. We need to make sure as developers, especially web developers, that we are ensuring that everything that we're building is catered to everyone. Not just one or two people, you know, not just the ones that can see, not just the folks that can hear. You know, we need to make sure that if somebody is using a screen reader to deal with our website, they are able to use the entire website. That really is why it's so important, is because we need to make sure that on one hand, we're adhering to ADA guidelines. The other side of things is generally, you know, just take care of the people that are going to take care of you, right? The more people you have, the bigger audience that you have for your page, the more successful you're going to be. So this, honestly, it's kind of a double-edged sword because you really, if you don't do it, you're going to limit your audience and you're kind of going to look like a jerk. The other side of it is, you know, if you do really, really well on this, you know, you're going to get a huge audience. You're going to get paid more. You're going to get, you know, a better grouping of people, and you're going to get more respect because you actually paid attention to something that is a critical component. All right. So CSS is the next part that we're going to talk about. I will note real quick, the podcasts generally are going to be somewhere between a half hour and an hour. I'm not going to put a hard number on it because, you know, occasionally there are reasons to kind of go further. Sometimes there's reasons to cut it a little shorter. With this series, there definitely will be a couple podcasts that, end up being an hour or so. And then there are going to be others that are much shorter. This is going to be more of a quick hit. I would anticipate it probably will be about the half hour, 45 minute mark. So maybe all told with the ridiculously awesome long introduction. I know I need to cut it down, but I don't want to. It's such a great song. It might be about 50 minutes. So let's talk about CSS. CSS, or cascading style sheets, describes how HTML elements are to be displayed on the screen, paper, and other media. CSS saves you a lot of work. It can control the layout of multiple web pages at once. External style sheets are stored in CSS files. That was taken from W3 Schools. With CSS, you're going to be using selectors to connect style code into your HTML elements. That really is the simplest way that I can put it. I tried to find something that sounded better, but really you're going to toss a class or ID into your HTML. And from there, you're going to turn around and select that to, something in the style code to modify the behavior, look, position, etc., of the element that you assign that selector to. That really is the basic way of putting it. You're going to be doing a ton of work inside of CSS files just because of the fact that you're going to have to, make sure that your design is as pixel perfect as you can. You'll hear me say that a lot. Developers and designers and, UI UX folks, that's the gig, right? We have to make sure that we take a mock-up from our client, from our employer, and ensure that we get as close to the standards as we possibly can. And if we do modify something, we need to make sure that as developers, we take it a step further. It kind of goes back to the outlook of go hard or go home. If you're going to do something, do it right. And make sure that if you're going to change things, make sure it is for the better in a pretty substantial way. So the first thing with CSS that I'm going to talk about is box model. Box model really, is an important piece. It should be really learned before you learn Flexbox and Grid. Because it basically was the original responsive, styling. That's not 100% true. Obviously, it's not what we consider responsive now. But it was as close as you could get. Here's a quote from MDN or Mozilla developer. Everything in CSS has a box around it, and understanding these boxes is key to being able to create layouts with CSS or to align items with other items. In this lesson, we're going to look at the proper look at CSS box model so that you can build more complex layout tasks with understanding how it works and the terminology that relates to it. The link is inside the show notes. Definitely, as you dive in, take a look at it. Obviously, we're not going to go through the entire lesson here. We're just going to kind of glance on it. I did leave a couple additional links for box model as well. Deep dive that one. Make sure you fully understand the box model. And when I say fully, go to CodePen, build a few, toy pages, and just toy with box model. If you go over to Free Code Camp, I want to say that they have a fairly good lesson on it inside of their HTML course, and that is 100% free. All right, so Flexbox. What the hell is Flexbox? So I'm going to do a huge shout out here. CSSTricks.com. If you're learning and you want to learn about, the CSS side of things, CSS Tricks is amazing. CSS-tricks.com. These guys rock the boat. Like, their guides honestly saved my bacon more times than I can count. I still use their guides if I'm sitting there for 20 minutes and for some reason something's not working right. I look over there and go, I'm being an idiot. I should probably do it the right way. Flexbox layout, flexible box model, module, a W3C candidate recommendation as of October 2017 aims at providing a more efficient way to lay out, align, and distribute space among items in a container, even when their size is unknown and or dynamic, thus the word flex. The main idea behind the flex layout is to give the container the ability to alter its items' width and height and order to best fill available space. mostly to accommodate to all kind of display devices and screen sizes. A flex container expands items to fill available free space or shrinks them to prevent overflow. Most importantly, the Flexbox layout is direction agnostic as opposed to regular layouts. Block, which is vertically based, and inline, which is horizontally based, while working well for pages, they lack flexibility, no pun intended, to support large or complex applications, especially when it comes to orientation changing, resizing, stretching, and shrinking, etc. Again, that's CSS tricks. And Flexbox definitely is important. It really is the one of the main drivers for responsive design. The next one is, you know, the other one that really works well for responsive design is going to be CSS Grid. Again, we're going to take from CSS Tricks. CSS Grid layout, aka Grid, is a two-dimensional grid-based layout system that aims to do nothing less than completely change the way that we design grid-based user interfaces. CSS has always been able to lay out web pages, but it's never done a very good job at it. First, we use tables, then floats, positioning, an inline block, but all of these methods were essentially hacks and left out the most important functionality. Vertical centering, for instance, Flexbox helped out, but it's intended for simpler one-dimension layouts, not complex two-dimensional ones. Flexbox and Grid actually work very well together. Grid is the first CSS module created specifically to solve layout problems. We've all been hacking our way around for as long as we've been making websites. 100% well said. Definitely, you know, and as I list off these websites, definitely give them a visit. Take a look at the show notes. Give them a visit. Give them a shout out. These guys know what they're doing, and they're very good at what they do. Now, obviously, Mozilla is, you know, the creator of Firefox, for those that aren't super aware. So their developer notes as far as HTML, CSS, and JavaScript are basically critical for somebody learning. And actually, ironically enough, MDN or Mozilla Developer is the next sourcing. We're going to talk about CSS preprocessors. CSS preprocessor is a program that lets you generate CSS from the preprocessor's own unique syntax. There are many CSS preprocessors to choose from. However, most CSS preprocessors will add some features that don't exist in pure CSS, such as mixin, nesting selector, inheritance selector, and so on. These features make CSS structure more readable and easier to maintain. I can personally attest to this. I actually, after the first unit with Lambda School, which seems forever ago, I sat down intentionally to learn SAS because prior to that, you know, I knew HTML, I knew CSS, I knew Flexbox, I knew Grid. I knew this stuff, but I didn't know a preprocessor. So I spent the time and actually learned one. I will not use CSS unless I need to. SAS is way easier to deal with. And the nice thing with a lot of CSS preprocessors is that you can actually bring them with you when you start using frameworks. You can use CSS as well. You'll see if you spin up a React project that you will have default CSS pages. But using SAS, especially with the ability to nest selectors and use mixins, you really quickly begin to see the value of using a CSS preprocessor. All right. And it's crazy because we talk about preprocessors and now we're going to talk about CSS frameworks. And this is where it starts getting a little convoluted because you have preprocessors, you have frameworks, you have this, you have that. And you have, you know, once you start doing, you know, frameworks, JavaScript frameworks, such as React, Vue, or Angular, all of a sudden you're going to see UI component libraries, right? Well, CSS framework is basically a component library. The difference is that it's a little less advanced, right? CSS frameworks, this is actually from Wikipedia. I couldn't find an amazing source on it, but here's a good definition for it. A CSS framework is a library allowing for easier, more standards compliant web design using the CSS language. Most of these frameworks contain at least a grid. More functional frameworks also come with more features, additional JavaScript-based functions, but are mostly design-oriented and focused around interactive UI patterns. This detail differentiates CSS frameworks from other JavaScript frameworks. All right, so we're going to take a pause here because the next section is the most important piece. You know, I mentioned that JavaScript really is the language of the front end. I'm going to talk about something that should come after JavaScript, but I want to talk about it now. And I didn't actually, I'll have to go back and edit my show notes because I didn't talk about this in there. There is what is called a superscript to JavaScript. If you listen to the first show, you heard me talking about preaching the preach of TypeScript. Well, here it is. Most programming languages by default are object oriented. You're going to declare the type. It's going to be a lot more strict in regards to how you declare things and how you modify those things. JavaScript really does not do that. You know, the idea of spaghetti code really does apply when you start getting into JavaScript. So as you learn, keep in mind that TypeScript exists. It takes JavaScript to a higher level, basically. It is becoming extremely popular. You know, one would hope eventually it just becomes how JavaScript reacts. Probably won't happen, but we can all wish. But JavaScript really gets a bit finicky and a little bit weird in a number of different places. There was actually an author. I'm going to actually look it up real quick. That way you have it. There's actually a book called JavaScript Understanding the Weird Parts. And it's actually been migrated onto Udemy. If you search that in Udemy, and I'll copy the link and put it in the show notes. But a gentleman by the name of Anthony Alcia wrote it, did it. You know, and it basically talks about things such as scopes, closures, prototypes, the this keyword. Those are all, it's just kind of odd. JavaScript's a weird duck. It really is. So let's talk about JavaScript. JavaScript, or originally known as ECMAScript, really, it's a cool language because it's so weird. You know, it's got its idiosyncrasies, and it really, you can do some cool stuff with it. Originally, it was constrained to the front end, but eventually, with the inception of Node, it was allowed to be, a server. You can create a server with it. That's what Node is. It basically compiles your JavaScript into C++ and lets you run it on the back end. The actual definition for JavaScript is, JavaScript is a scripting language that allows you to create dynamically updating content, control media, animate images, and pretty much everything else. Okay, not everything, but it's amazing what you can achieve with a few lines of JavaScript code. That's from MDN. Definitely take a look at that one. They really do a good job going over kind of the bare bones basics. And then from there, getting into more advanced stuff. I will mention jQuery very briefly, very quickly. jQuery is a fast, small, and feature-rich JavaScript library. It makes things like HTML document traversal and manipulation, event handling, animation, and AJAX much simpler, with an easy-to-use API that works across a multitude of browsers with a combination of versatility, extensibility. jQuery has changed the way millions of people write JavaScript. jQuery was super, super popular for a long time. It kind of lost its popularity a bit when you started to see the inception of JavaScript frameworks. And the reason for that is that it really wasn't as necessary anymore. Because the JavaScript frameworks really just kind of, it gave you a pattern to go by to create a page and, allowed you to modify the way that that page interacted with the client, right? They click on a button, it does X. They double click on a button, it does Y. They slide the little slider in the corner. It does Z, right? So jQuery was kind of the initiator of that, in my opinion. And it's still around. They're still updating. It's still a thing. But it's substantially less popular these days. So JavaScript, I didn't go over, I'm going to be honest, I didn't go over a lot of the keys to hit on JavaScript in the show notes. I'm actually going to be referring to other notes that I have elsewhere, so bear with me just a second here. We are gonna go into some of the stuff that you really need to learn as far as the super, super basic stuff of JavaScript. As I said earlier, though, I'm going to ignore the super, super basic stuff that you're going to have to learn on your own. I am currently working on a Medium series that goes over a lot of that. So definitely hop over to my personal Medium account. Take a look. They're good. Dear Lord, where did this run off to? There it is. But yeah, so the big things with JavaScript to learn that you might not think about offhand. You're obviously going to learn functions. You're going to learn primitive types. You're going to learn about arrays, objects, classes, prototypes. But, you know, one of the things that I've seen missed is understanding what hoisting is. You know, having a solid understanding of what closure is. And these, you know, scope, closure, this keyword, all the stuff that I listed with understanding the weird parts, those are critical things. Understanding what closure does, understanding what scoping is, understanding what prototypes is, understanding the this keyword, understanding the interaction from the ES6 arrow functionality with the this keyword. These are things that, you know, you're getting a little bit more advanced, you know, information from, or on. You're getting more into the realm of, oh my God, like I just dove in head first and hit a brick wall. You know, understanding, really truly understanding the difference between the different variable types, between var, let, and const, and dear Lord, I swear to God, please, in 2021, do not even write var unless you're just playing with it. Do not actually include it in live code. It is literally the devil. You know, obviously, strings, numbers, booleans, undefined, null, you know, symbol, big int. These are all, you know, you've got your primitive types, you've got your different variables. You know, understand how objects work and why there's a lot of people that talk about the fact that objects are basically everything in JavaScript. You know, you want to understand dot notation, bracket notation. You want to understand object methods, array methods. You'll be using array methods to a huge degree. The critical ones there, in my opinion, off the top of my head, are going to be map, for each. Those are ones that you're going to see pretty much on a constant day-to-day when you are using front-end frameworks. And just a clarification, I say front-end frameworks. I'm going to make somebody mad. technically, Angular and Vue are frameworks. React is actually what is referred to as a UI framework or a UI library. It doesn't actually, it's, and the reason that you're talking about a framework versus a library is because React is fairly unopinionated. You're basically going to be able to do whatever the hell you want. Angular, especially, ironically, Angular was the reason that React was put together. We're going to talk about that in the next episode. But yeah, I mean, it's basically framework versus library. Basically, one of them tells you how to write the code, and the other one says, write your code and hope it works. It's not that simple, obviously, but it's kind of fun to think of it that way because there is a lot of stuff that, you know, it is different, right? But yeah, as you're using a front-end library, you're going to see the array methods pop, push, Shift, unshift, concat is a really big one. But generally when it comes to JavaScript, and this is really important to understand, there is so much there. You can learn, you know, basic JavaScript, you can probably have down in, you know, a couple months. But to really get into the nitty-gritty of it and get to the point where, you know, you understand the vast majority of it, you're probably looking at 6 months to a year at minimum. You know, I will do a shout out here. Wes Boss. If I could spell it, would help. Wes Boss was a boot camp instructor. He does courses and a couple of them are free. He has one, if I can find it, called JavaScript 30. And the website for it is javascript30.com. And basically, you know, what it comes down to is that JavaScript 30 will allow you to go through a number of different projects that he's got and learn various aspects of JavaScript. I will be honest with you. I did a couple of them. I didn't go through all of the projects. I probably should have. They're kind of cool and they're fun to do. It looks like, but I definitely will recommend, you know, doing this. But how I would suggest doing it, and I want to kind of put this philosophy out there, because this is something that I think, especially, you know, I mentioned tutorial hell. This is how to use a tutorial without throwing yourself into a tutorial hell infinite loop. Start the tutorial. Listen to the basic, you know, explanation of what you're doing and how you're doing something. Pause the video. Figure it out. Build the code. Write the code. You know, pull open some docs under, you know, go into deep dive into the topics that are being talked about. You know, if you own a course and it's self-paced, why wouldn't you just pause the video and go in depth on every single topic that they're talking about? Some are going to be more important than others. You know, understanding the difference between var, let, and const, like, it's important, but in the grand scheme of things, you're going to be using that on a pretty much constant basis. By contrast, understanding, you know, what async and await do, understanding promises, it is honestly something you're going to want to do more deep diving on. The weird parts, scope, closure, prototypes, the this keyword, these are things you want to do a deep dive on, right? But start a tutorial, pause the video, build it. Because at the end of the day, you're going to have the support of the rest of that video. But if you code along, like a lot of these videos are intended, you're not going to get the same kind of outcome, right? Because they're holding your hand the entire way through the tutorial. You don't want that. You want to get to the point where you can look at code, recognize what it does, and just hammer it out. Either recreate it, fix it, or make it better. You know, you want to be able to, with minimal usage of docs, be able to do the vast majority of the things that you set out to learn. You know, for example, I struggled with this very, very intensely. I have probably 15 or 20 Udemy courses that I've finished probably about 75% of. And what it comes down to is that I did the tutorial. I understood the concepts at the time. But within like 2 hours, all of a sudden it's like, wait, how do I do that? Shit. How do I do that? Crap. And all of a sudden now I'm having to go back into the video and I'm having to hammer into documentation and I'm having to kind of throw my head against the wall because it didn't click as deeply as it would have been if I stopped the videos, did deep dives, and used the code. If I struggled through and built what the tutorials were telling me to build without the tutorials help until after it was done, at that point, I would have learned more. So definitely, that's a good way to do it. JavaScript 30 is free. JavaScript30.com. I'll link it into the course notes. You will see a ton of stuff from West Boss. He is ridiculously good at what he does. He also is one of the hosts of the Syntax podcast. Super, super solid guy. He's been teaching for a long time. His partner in crime over at Syntax, I hacked this name up so bad it's not even funny. Scott Alinsky or Salinsky. Both of them educate. Both of them are really good. The other, you know, Scott's foray into all of this is actually Level Up tutorials. So if you search that, you'll see a bunch of them. But again, you know, learn what you can, and maybe you're one of those people that needs repetition. Maybe you're one of those people you're gonna get one of these courses, and you're gonna do it 4 or 5 times in a row. Fine, that's fine. Pause it, put it to practice. Once it's done, build something with the skills that you've learned. You know, it's a pretty common thing to see. You know, 100-day code, right? You're going to code for 100 days. Do it. Do it. But don't use tutorials to do it. That was the mistake I ran into. I certainly paid for it for a good long while. Save yourself some hassle. Save yourself some frustration. Definitely, though, you know, if you are the kind of person that you need a little bit of handholding going through it, feel free to do it. I get it. Do it. So let's kind of get back on task here. So yeah, in closing today, there's the basics. We talked about HTML, semantic HTML, accessibility, CSS, what CSS is, the box model. There are some links there so you can understand the box model, Flexbox, CSS grid. Again, css-tricks.com to take a look at, you know, stuff on that. CSS preprocessors, CSS frameworks, JavaScript, and jQuery. Again, I didn't go super into depth with JavaScript, and I did that intentionally. You need to find what works for you. JavaScript is a programming language. There are very advanced aspects to it. Make it a project, right? If you're going to be a self-taught, if you're wanting to go to the self-taught route, start with the docs. Start with a couple tutorials. You know, hammer out a couple of these tutorials. Again, pause it, build along the way. Pure JavaScript can build awesome projects. Pure JavaScript, you could actually interact with HTML and CSS without any issues. Like, you're doing what's referred to as DOM manipulation, which is actually what is superseded by, you know, React, Vue, and Angular, right? Is that it basically, the framework of the UI library will supersede the DOM manipulation that you would do in vanilla JavaScript, right? If you spin up a React app, if you couldn't tell, React is kind of my go-to framework, or UI library, technically. You know, if you spin up a Create React app, you will see very, very quickly that it is legitimately just JavaScript. If you open the index.js file in a new Create React App project, you will see at the bottom of the page, render. You know, document queries, or you're looking at query selector. You know, it's identifying a root element from the HTML, and it's shoving all of the content that you're putting into the React code into that HTML document and then projecting that HTML document, right? Don't be afraid to explore. You're going to break things, right? Like, I cannot say this enough. You're going to hit roadblocks, whether that roadblock is, dear God, this is just mind-numbing. You know, I've spent 12 hours today just hammering away at code, learning code. Good. That's great. Every hour, take a break. Take a 10-minute break. Not even kidding. Take a 10-minute break. Go, you know, get up, do a couple stretches, go to the bathroom, grab a drink, walk outside, walk your dog, pick up your kid from, you know, school if you need to. Take breaks, because it's going to allow you to kind of have that sink in. You can, if you're doing monotonous tasks, you know, cleaning the house or what have you. Excuse me. And you're taking a break from coding for, you know, 10 minutes. First of all, if you're working on learning to code for 12 hours a day and you spend 10 minutes every hour working on your house, by God, it will be the most pristine, pretty house on the face of the planet. Just saying. Your spouse or partner will love you for that. But no, I mean, it's go hard. I definitely get it. I have had days where I will spend, you know, 9 o'clock in the morning till like 6-7 o'clock at night, just hammering away at code, just going. And then I'll turn around, get done actually cranking out code, and I'll have a 4-hour conversation about code. Like I've been there. That's part of the learning process. Feeling the excitement to dive into all this. It's huge. Get excited. Get passionate. Make it your obsession to be the best at it. But as you go through, just understand there's going to be moments where you're ready to put your head through your monitor, where you want to pick up your keyboard, throw it across the room, and go stomp on it. You're going to hit the wall. That's part of this. You know, there's a topic called gamification, right? Where you take learning and make it a game. Do that. Make it a game. You know, if you're a sweets person, you get a piece of chocolate, like a little tiny chunk of chocolate, every hour that you're coding, that you're learning. In your 10-minute break, you go over, you get your bite of chocolate, you go do something for the remainder of that 10 minutes. Set a timer for 10 minutes, go do something. I hesitate to say go slow, but to a degree you need to slow down just enough so that it actually absorbs. Stay on a specific topic for a week at a time. You know, if you're learning JavaScript, dude, learn JavaScript over the course of 3 months. You know, go through the super basic stuff, then go into arrays and array methods, go into objects and the object methods that are there, go into classes and prototypes. You know, and this, you know, go into asynchronous code, go into DOM manipulation, like spend a week on each one of these topics. And by the time that you're done, you're golden. Get to the point where you can get on Google and you can say, hey, I want to learn JavaScript, and take the most critical things that are on the list to do, to learn. And put them into your own little sprints. Sprints, you know, you're as a software engineer, you're going to hear the word and the terminology sprints on a regular basis, right? You might look it up. What does sprint mean to a software engineer? And, you know, just understand, set up your own sprints, you know, a week at a time, Monday through Sunday. Here's your sprint. Dedicate as much time as you can to it. Get as much done during that time as you can. But as you're going through, as you're learning, take the time to build along the way. I cannot hammer that home enough. And the reason that I keep hammering it home, the reason that I keep saying it, is because I want others to not get stuck in the position that I got stuck in. Right? I don't have a decent portfolio up right now. Why? Not because I can't build one, but because I don't have the projects that I want to fill it with. Partially because I'm super OCD about the projects that I want to do. Partially because I am, you know, trying to accomplish a mountain. Partially because I am doing highly complex things and trying to make it as complex as possible, because that realistically is how you get hired in this industry if you don't want to go to college for 4 years. Take the time to build. Spend the money on a domain, build a portfolio, you know, keep that portfolio up to date, show off your code, show off your knowledge. And again, go hard. As hard as you can. Now, as we close out the podcast, I want to thank everybody for hanging out. I want to thank everybody for, you know, taking the time to listen. I really hope that this gives you insight and inspiration, you know, as you start diving into the front end of web development. I will certainly take a moment and say we are already on Spotify. By the time that this podcast is actually published, I should have social media links up for it. I want to start building a community. I want to start seeing some friendly faces. I want to start seeing some questions that we can answer. We are going to forego the awesome frameworks for this episode just because we, you know, we're kind of going over time, and I kind of went over a couple of them. SAS, LESS, jQuery, Bootstrap, Material UI, Ant Design, and there's more. Just explore. Make sure that if you have questions currently, you get on the anchor.fm page for the podcast. There is a voice message that you can leave. I'm not going to publish them without your permission, but if you want to leave a voice message, you certainly can. Try and be respectful and adult. Ask some questions. Let's get some material going in that direction too. But let's build a community. We, you know, this podcast, like I said, you know, it's just starting out. We're just starting to get people in the door. You know, the hope is that you share it with your friends that you think are interested. You know, if there's a part of it that you want to share with your friends, certainly feel free to cut up the audio. We will hopefully, by the time this is published, have a YouTube where we'll be dumping the audio, you know, with the new cover art, just hanging out. So we'll be on YouTube. We're going to be on Twitter. I might put together a LinkedIn group. There will be a Facebook page. There is so much that I have planned. There's so much coming. And at the end of the day, as things progress, you're going to see things actually, you know, popping up with the words JavaScript lifestyle. There are projects in the back end that I can't really talk about yet, but they are coming. Be ready. Be aware. Get educated. You know, if software engineering is your passion, get obsessed and go hard or go home. Thanks for listening.